Hi everyone, this is Matt Price, host of Dynasty Game Night. My co-host John Bosch and I created this podcast for one reason, to focus on fun. After all, fun is the reason we all started playing fantasy football in the first place. I love games of all sorts, card games, board games, video games, really any kind of game you can think of. So one day, John and I decided it was time for a podcast where we just play games. You might learn something along the way, but you won't find much hard-hitting analysis here. Check out all the other incredible podcasts DLF has to offer for that sort of thing. On Dynasty Game Night, our primary focus is to entertain. So if you like playing games or watching game shows, this might just be the podcast for you. We'd love for you to give it a listen and play along with the contestants and maybe even win a chance to be on the show.
Welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name is Peter Howard at PA Howdy. This is part three in a long conversation me and Zach Reed from the Dynasty Dummies podcast got into. Instead of doing an actual podcast on one individual player, we just ended up riffing for a very long time. So if you just clicked on the first episode or you're from the future and this is a random episode you chose to click, you should know that there are two episodes before this one, and I can't believe I'm saying it, but I think there's at least one more that I can ring out of our conversation. In fact, I could probably ring two or three. And we talked for way too long, but I think there's at least one more section that I want to get in, so it's going to be a four-parter. In this section here, we spoke about Antonio Gandy-Golden, and actually it worked out really well, and I was able to bring some of the stuff together where we ended up talking a lot about sleepers, potential sleepers, and how you can look for and identify sleepers from our different processes, specifically referring to players in the 2020 class and what we thought of various different deeper guys that have been mentioned from this class. So it's really interesting part of the conversation. Hopefully you can bring out some relevant current dynasty value out of it as well. Again, let us know what's working, what's not. Hit me up on Twitter at PA Howdy. Zach is at TacitAssassin13. I will see you again in a moment while I get back talking to Zach. Thanks very much. Bye.
So I honestly think like I would be. And that goes back to how hard I'm going to adjust for draft capital. I adjust for draft capital because I admit I'm going to be wrong a lot. So if they're drafted in the first round, that matters more than anything we've looked at so far. So I'm going to rank him. I haven't even ranked him. I will rank him based on his draft capital. And it's more than expected right now. It goes in the first round. So I will adjust up because opportunity matters in the NFL. And draft capital gets it more right than I do. Well, actually, I beat draft capital by a little bit, but anyway, yes. A lot. I mean, you only have to catch so many Stephon Diggs's and T.Y. Hilton's and Adam Thielen's before you know.
Yeah,
I can miss a lot, and I'm still going to look above 50%. To be honest, it's like you know, it's like winning the millionaire DFS contest. You can continually lose after that for your model who's going to win it. So that's a little bit of a you know. But I like saying it. But anyway, so if he goes in the first round, he goes to a team where there's weaker competition for opportunity. And you know, I don't
Buffalo.
Like the. It's not that there are targets available. Be very clear on that. Like, just in case you ever heard that argument, I like to think I was an early arguer on that. That targets aren't available. Targets move with the players because players are the ones that earn the targets. They're not laying on the ground because there's no wide receiver or tight end or running back that used to catch the ball a lot. But if there's weaker competition for the opportunity that all these players can create, that's a very strong case for how Ruggs, who's been in a very competitive college team, was above average at that wide receiver three role in a very competitive, very talented roster in college. That's a better argument. I think that's a positive argument for Ruggs. But that's the argument. Not he compares to Stephon Diggs, or there were three of them who were already NFL-level talents, because we as yet don't know that. Right. That's adjusting for what we think we know, but yeah, Antonio Gandy, I want to talk about him if you don't mind. I know you probably have to, you know, life.
No, we're good. We're good. We're good.
What do you think of Antonio Gandy-Golden?
So I am happier about him after the then, and I don't like, again, we just spent hours poo-pooing the combine, but after the combine and watching him like run a 4.6 at, you know, as big as he is.
And I was going to say, this is, you know, after shitting on adjustments for so long, we're all going to just, we're just going to mention that adjustment straight away because it's a good one. There's a reason for it.
And I don't like, I'm not adjusting the numbers. I'm sitting there going, okay, this is a 6'4", 222 pound man who runs a 4.6. And my concern with Antonio Gandy-Golden coming out of school is his school. He went to Liberty. And so the competition at Liberty is not great. And so when you're seeing Antonio Gandy-Golden make plays where he's going up and making the Randy Moss play, you know, over defender, or he looks like Calvin Johnson high pointing a fade in the back corner of the end zone, the question I have with the film is, okay, is he doing this because he is that good and that athletic, or is he doing it because he is that much bigger than everybody else that he plays against? And so that was, there are certain players that the combine actually matters to me. It mattered with Cam Akers for me this year because his offensive line was garbage. And so watching his tape, you're going, okay, I have to imagine him doing things, and I don't like to do that. Like I go based on what I see on film, but there are also checkpoints. There are checkpoints that I can use with the combine. There are checkpoints that I can use when I talk to somebody like you and Kyle, and so the combine is one of these checkpoints for players like Antonio Gandy-Golden. And the things that I loved about him is, again, he is the type of player who can take a 50-50 ball and all of a sudden tip that scale to it being an 80% chance that he is going to come down with it. And he's actually really good at going down the field and tracking the ball too. So as a 6'4 player, it's pretty rare to see a guy going down the field 25, 30, 35 yards and making plays. He can do that. And the fact that he is 4.6 and the fact that he is as big and as strong as he is really excites me.
My brief. I'll try to be brief. Antonio Gandy-Golden. One, what a name. I think that's really all we should, you know.
Yeah.
Names matter. Okay. Most things don't matter. Names matter. And that name is awesome in my mind. I know no one's pointing it out. Like, who was it we got obsessed with last year? I don't know. But Gandy-Golden just rolls off my tongue. Most names don't. I like it. I've got 2 years production with him. The first thing I said when I saw his profile is he reminds me of Michael Gallup. This is a guy who's elevated from an earlier lower conference. And in fact, I've since learned the team is actually the one that elevated to a conference rather than just him. He's classed as the independent conference, which I think is just every team that's not in the Big Five and the Power Five, right? So, and when I said that the conference share doesn't matter, when you're looking at the independent conference, players clearly dominate a significantly larger amount when they're good at competition level of those competing for targets and yards on the team, not against the defense, than others. Like it's 32% to around an average of 28 to 27. So, yeah, we should expect higher market share. But based on these new scores, I literally created just to try and find out about Henry Ruggs a little bit more. Even when adjusted for his conference, his conference expectation is like 37% of receiving yards in for wide receiver ones for the team. And he was above that. His average was above that by 6%. So he was producing above even his conference level. So, and you know, applying the Calvin Ridley rule has saved me from not liking a lot of late producers, because he looks like a late producer where we've only got these 2 years that come at. I moved away from him. Oh no, where was he? He was 19 and 20, right? He played eight. I've got oh yeah, 2 years. He played at 20 and 21. So usually I just tag him as, you know, a late breakout, late producer. But the Calvin Ridley role has saved me so many, in fact, put me early on a lot of players. Kenny Golladay, I really do think I was one of the early ones who said, hey, that guy's not bad. And he elevated, so we only had these late years. And the Calvin Ridley role has taught me if they don't play a lot for whatever reason early, you just kind of have to cut that off. And we just don't know what they would have done early. What did they do late? Significantly above average. Okay, good player. So that's where I'm at with Gardner Golladay. But, you know, it is more difficult to elevate from Liberty and the independent conference to the NFL. His production profile looks good, even when we take into the context of that. And then you've got, like you say, the combine. We've gone over what we think of the combine, but I was wondering if we were still at a place where someone's going to look at a 4.6 time and go, oh, above the threshold, no. Do you think, like, most people are comfortable with height and weight adjusted speed scores at this point? Probably not.
I'm sure there'd be some people that will look at that, and if you don't have context and you say here's a receiver running a 4.6, well, people still knock Jarvis Landry for running, well, I mean, at the combine I think he was like a 4.72, and at his pro day he was like a 4.58. So, like, people right. still knock Landry for that. Granted, he's not 6'4", 220, but I think that there is a little bit of a stigma to not running fast. Right. For me, Gandy Golden running a 4.6 is very similar to Justin Jefferson running a 4.43. Like, it's that same, because he's not winning with his speed, but he's like fast, you say, he's fast enough to win.
He overcomes the same problem in a different way because of the way he's built. And if he's good, hopefully he's good enough to bring that talent, well, however he's doing it, to the NFL. And that's the theory. So I really like Gandy Golden. I think he came out as the second most like Calvin Johnson in my brand new combine index, which is basically player compared to Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson scores the highest on there. And let's face it, everyone's trying to find metrics that compare well to Calvin Johnson when they look at the combine. So, like, he's the second most like Calvin Johnson. But how can he be? Mainly because of his size. He's very, very still smaller, but similar in size to Calvin Johnson. He had 9.6-inch hands, because that's the other metric people like to use. And his BMI was 27.1. So again, around as thick as Calvin Johnson was. It's 4.6 times. It's not enough to correct all of that and get him away from a Calvin Johnson comparison. Gallup, right back to the similar comparison, a guy who gets decent draft capital and has hype, but you're able to get a little late. Because I don't want to go in on Gandy Golden with a first-round pick. I don't want to, because there's enough questions. Even I can admit there's enough questions from a lower conference. That's a little high priced, but I really like him. That's probably the quickest I can do it.
Well, and I don't think that you're going to end up spending a first round rookie pick on Antonio Gandy Golden, and so you know you're gonna be happy about that. I mean, we just did a 2-round 14 team super flex mock, so we drafted 28 players and he didn't go, which. Again, that's, you're getting value in this class, and this is the thing that I've been saying from the very beginning. And you did your little like evil genius rub your hands together when you thought the class wasn't going to be what everyone thought it was going to be. To me, I'm sitting there going, Peter, no, look at me. The class is not going to be 1,000 Saquon Barkleys, but what's going to happen is there is a tier below that where there are 5 running backs that I absolutely love, and there is a list. So I have Chenault. I think he's probably, I don't know, my wide receiver 8 or 9 or 10 in this class. And he was a very productive player. Same thing with Antonio Gandy Golden. I think I've got him, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8. Like, that's in that range. But in that same range is a guy like T. Higgins. In that same range is a guy like Michael Pittman. In that same range is a guy like Tyler Johnson. In that same range is a guy like Jerry Jeudy. And so, like, it's not necessarily – this huge peak, because there's not like the elite talent. There's not a player in this draft that I'm looking at and saying, man, he is going to definitely be the next superstar. And we've had that a few years. I mean, a couple of years ago, Kyle and I had a big argument, but I'm sitting there saying Christian McCaffrey has that profile for me where he is that next generation running back.
Right.
Three or four years ago, it was Ezekiel Elliott. And you could see his transition to the NFL being an elite running back. Same thing with Saquon Barkley. You could see that elite running back coming. I don't think that this class has that sexy back, but the breadth of this class, you know, it's not. And I keep using that because people are saying it's deep, and I'm like, well, it's deep, but it's not deep in the traditional sense of the term where we think of, you know, you have your first round talent.
Calvin Johnson's.
No. And so like you have your tier one.
No, Odell Beckham's and Mike Evans, like 2014. Yeah, it's deep in Michael Gallup.
Like for me. Yeah. For me, my tier one is four guys. It's three running backs and one receiver. My tier two is like 16 players. Because there's another two running backs, and then there are like 10. Well, I guess it's probably not 16, but there are 10 or 12 receivers that are all really, really good. And so
I've not seen 10 or 12.
Oh man, there are some.
But this really, is a good number.
Yeah, like there are some serious players in this draft in terms of, for me, looking at NFL talent and looking at fantasy production. I mean, I start going down the list, and once you get by CeeDee Lamb, I'm seeing Justin Jefferson, I'm seeing Jerry Jeudy, I'm seeing Bryan Edwards, I'm seeing Jalen Reagor, I'm seeing Tyler Johnson, I'm seeing Michael Pittman, I'm seeing T. Higgins, who I don't love.
Higgins is interesting.
I don't love as much
as 40.
Yeah, I don't love as much as a lot of the tape guys do, because he reminds me of that Mike Williams profile, and maybe that's because he went to Clemson, but that he's not as mobile as I like. But then again, keep going past him and you've got Gandy Golden and you've got Chenault, and you've got, like, there are some serious players. And we're not even to Henry Ruggs, who everybody loves, except for us, apparently, you know? And so there is some serious, serious talent. And then you throw in the quarterbacks, where you've got two quarterbacks who look like they're going to be very productive NFL players pending medical. And I think you've got a couple of sneaky guys. I think Jalen Hurts is being completely undersold in this class, because people are talking about Tua and people are talking about Burrow and people are talking about, you know, how great the kid from Oregon looks, Justin Herbert. And they're overlooking the fact that the new cheap production in the NFL in terms of fantasy quarterbacks is rushing. And Jalen Hurts is a guy who is incredible with the ball in his hand and is not a bad thrower. Like, he's certainly not the worst thrower in this class. So I really think that this is a deep class, unless you're looking for a tight end.
He's so overlooked that someone had to ask me about him before I realized I had him all queued up to go in the database. I just hadn't added his name. I hadn't noticed that guy wasn't in there. But I actually, you know, added his name and added him in. And on quarterbacks, the thing I like to look at the most is completion percentage over expected. That's a Josh Hams, yep, my metric. He has better data than I do, and is more handsome and smarter. So it's what I call a hacked version, because I doubt it's gonna look what numbers will look like when Josh does it. Okay. But I have a pretty decent version of it, as best I can do anyway, with my limited skill set. Yeah, I still have a fault here. Jalen Hurts is listed as a 2022 prospect. And as far as SIPO goes, the minute that guy asked me and I added him into the class, he came up for the prospect in this class. I was like, oh,
yeah,
no one's mentioned this guy to me. So it's really interesting. This is the second time I've heard his name, and you're literally saying what I observe here. And just for reference, like, these numbers have got to be cracked. I can't wait to see Josh's results. But I've got, like, Joe Burrow, and it only uses the last season 19% above average.
He had the greatest season in the history of college football. Yeah.
Tua is 13% above average. And
Tagovailoa.
Yeah, 10% above average. And again, that's significant. Like, normally we're looking at a player just getting over 10%. Oh, like, oh, look, that's the best wide receiver in the class when you dig past. Like, Kyler Murray was 9% above average. It was really good last year. Yeah. So, like, Jalen Hurts was actually completing, as far as I can tell. Let's wait until what Josh tells us, right? But based on his conference. So, like, that was eye-opening. Yeah. Like, no one mentioned that guy to me, except that one guy who sent me a message who was like, hey, where's this guy? And I was like, oh, sorry. Yeah, I gotta add that name.
I got him at 27th overall in that rookie mock, and it was a super flex. Like, to me, that's mind-blowing because of his ability with his legs. I mean, like, look, he's fine as a quarterback, as throwing the ball. Like, he's not a bad thrower, but you add in the upside with his legs, and now you've got that same type of profile that we saw with Daniel Jones and Josh Allen.
Oh, nasty name.
Well, no, but nasty names, but fantasy production. Like, I don't care that they're bad quarterbacks, because they're producing.
That's the thing. Jalen Hurts seems to have been a slightly better quarterback.
Certainly.
He was passing well. Did he get injured his second year or something? I'm just looking.
He transferred. He was there, and Tua took over, and he transferred to Oklahoma, is what happened.
Oh, neat. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
But
no, he's interesting. There's a wide receiver who played quarterback for a while as well, right? So we might have Julian Edelman type situation. Is he going to go to the Patriots? Who was it? It was
Lynn Bowden. He actually led the SEC in rushing as a quarterback in 8 games, and still had like a 20. It was like a 23.5% receiving share on the team, even though he played quarterback for 8 games.
Right.
Like, it was like, and he is super
athletic.
Explain
some of the weirdness in his sample. Like, I don't have how many games he played at age 20, but I have stats from at age 20. And I assume it's kind of some crossover in the positions there. He's got
I think it was 3 quarterbacks at Kentucky this year got hurt. And so he was like the emergency quarterback. Like, the next guy they put in was going to be the Zamboni driver, like the hockey team did. Right.
Going down the nearest ice rink, just fine. Yeah.
But that was kind of the, like, what happened with Lynn Bowden is all of a sudden they needed somebody to play quarterback, and he was the most athletic guy on their team. And so there you go. And so he went from being a pretty serviceable wide receiver, where, like, the year before last, he had 67 catches and 745 yards, and it was like 34.5% of the receptions of the team and 35.5% of the yards, to the next season playing quarterback for 8 games and leading the SEC in rushing. which is just, it's a little mind-blowing that's kind of his career trajectory, but it's also impressive.
It is interesting. I think, like, I posted on Twitter the other day, there's a wide receiver lowdown, and everyone does that, so I try not to be like, here's the sleeper for this class. If you're finding a sleeper every year, I think your process is off. I think you're just creating content, which is fine, but, like, if every year there's a guy no one's talking about that you like, then you probably just looking for him. So I've backed off it a little because the stats are weird. Like, I was literally just looking at the number. I was looking for tropes of bust candidates. I was like, wow, this guy didn't play that year and he's got good numbers. What the hell's going on? And so I kind of liked it. And I kind of like that. Like, there are several different ways you can identify decent guys to take shots on. And also bust. And one decent guy to take shot on is someone whose profile simply is incomprehensible when you're looking at the past, and someone who switched between wide receiver and quarterback, or running back and wide receiver, like Wes Welker did. Like, let's see where he goes, playing for Kentucky in the SEC. Apparently, I just learned that. but that's interesting because he did have some interesting receiving numbers at weird ages. But if he was having a what sounds like a remarkably different path towards the NFL. Yeah. And that's interesting to me. I did notice, like, didn't he? He didn't run a 40 either.
No, he pulled his hamstring like a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, yeah. So he didn't. I don't think he did much for testing other than the bench press.
Huge hands, great BMI. Let's go.
that sounds like my profile. Although I did not lead the SEC in rushing.
Like, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Bowden. I wonder if he gets asked if he'll switch to quarterback or.
I don't switch to tight end or whatever. I don't think he's a quarterback. I see him as being a wide receiver. There were a couple of guys that they were talking about. There was a I think Antonio Gibson is a receiver that they're talking about trying to switch to running back. Which I don't know. That's an interesting and he had a pretty good 40 time too. Not that matters because we're poo-pooing the combine. How will the combine?
Hell on the combine. Just for nothing. And just to check, I'm not missing anything. Chase Claypool is the most Calvin Johnson-y, like, according to my Calvin Johnson index or combine score, as it's written down in the database. Incredibly impressive physical human being. And, you know, he did stuff in college. If you're looking for an exception to the late producer, like I mentioned earlier, there's some Brandon Marshalls that had great last years. But this guy played, he only played five games his first year, so that's fine. But age 19 and 20, he played 11 and 13 games and wasn't, like, he had 17 and 19% of the team's receiving yards. He's a good college player. He just doesn't cross the thresholds I tend to like. I don't even know his breakout age at this point. But he just looks like he fits into that classic late breakout fade type trope, if anyone's going to boost him up. Am I missing anything?
No, and I think he's a player who is going to be interesting as a wide receiver. I think the NFL really, and there were a few teams that asked him to try out in the combine as a tight end. And I think that he is more suited to that move tight end role than he is to a wide receiver role. When I was watching Cole Kmet, who is the tight end at Notre Dame, and every time every game that I was watching Kmet, I'm like, who's this Claypool guy? He's way better than Kmet. And, and you know, you realize that he's a wide receiver, and then you're like, okay, well, then as a wide receiver, he's fine. But as a tight end, he's really, really exciting.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so I don't know. He actually ran a really nice 40 also, and so I may have cemented himself as a wide receiver, but I like him better, and I like his profile better as a tight end. So whatever that's worth.
Someone was trying to prove that tape was better at catching outliers at me on Twitter the other day with Tyreek Hill, like, you'll never catch him. And just to clear that up, I have plenty of Tyreek Hill. Because a guy that athletic,
yeah,
for free, yeah. What am I, stupid? Yeah. He was barely owned after most rookie drafts. I picked him off of the waiver a few times, and that Kansas City triumvirate was just an interest. I was more interested in DeMarcus Robinson. It was very clear at the time. He's the one who had decent, not great, decent college production, broke out at 19. But, like, this uber athlete who was competing, like, why not? Free. And that's what I'm going to say about Claypool. Like, he doesn't, like, if people start pushing him into the second round, I'll start being the guy talking about late breakouts and stuff. But, like, especially if he converts to tight end, like, what the hell do I know? You're mostly looking at peak seasons for tight ends, so that would actually fit. But, like, for free, a guy that built, yeah, sure. But, also, Donovan Peoples-Jones is the other one in that conversation. I would like Claypool a lot more than I'd like Donovan Peoples-Jones. And that's... Sorry, guys. I'm going to cut it off there. I didn't really say much about DPJ just yet.
anyway. We didn't get into the conversation pretty deeply, so I'll save him for another podcast if anyone wants me to talk about him, or someone else who comes on wants to talk about him more in depth. We'll save him from another time. In the next section, we're going to talk more about the 2020 class, and specifically about how rookie pick values fluctuate from year to year, and about my idea that I was pitching for a while there, that the 2020 class is overrated and doomed to fail. It's a really interesting section. I'm going to make it the last section of this four-part interview with Zach Reed. Hope you've enjoyed it so far. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you in the next part with Zach Reed. Thanks very much. Bye.
Yeah. Chicken or crow, chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got their lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, Jake got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road. Go, clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.